you know, Sock, less experienced, doesn't quite have that nuance to his game yet. And Colin Schick is pretty wild out there as well in the doubles court. So I think that there'll be some chaos in that partnership, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them upset one, maybe two good teams, but a deep run in men's doubles, I would be a bit shocked.
Yeah, I would agree. It'll, I mean, it's strange to even think about. You have the Masters in January out in California, and players don't really know, like, nobody really knows who's playing that. Because I've heard a lot of things where there's like MLP signed players that haven't agreed to a reduction or anything, and then they try to sign up for the PPA Masters, and they're like, nope, sorry, you can't play it. So they're blocking people from playing it. So I don't quite know. And then I saw something else posted where it says anybody can play it. So it feels like they were using it as leverage for a moment in time, and I guess maybe now anybody can sign up and play it. But none of the merger, non-merger stuff has really been cleared up. Well, other than the fact that they have not merged, and it's what, December 14th right 12th? Now?
Oh, 14th.
Okay. Same thing.
Yeah, it's close. Mid-December. Let's go mid-December.
What is time? So we have to get all that sorted out, and then it's tough for the players because we don't know what schedule we have next year. I don't know what dates I have to play or what places I have to be at, and it needs to be figured out.
It's trying, yeah, and I know, and I'm, you know, I try not to just constantly ask questions to some of those higher up MLP people that I know and have connections with, but. I mean, it just seems like a roller coaster. It's like, oh, 85% merger. And then, you know, like 48 hours later, it's like under 50%. Then it's back up to 90. Like it really is the epitome of peaks and valleys with this stuff. And it changes day to day. 24, 48 hours is an eternity with some of the negotiations going on between these heavy hitters. So, I hope everyone's on court together. And I mean, that's all you can really hope for, even though I'm sure we're going to get a little zinger in the next week or so that gives a lot of information. A couple other matchups, at least on the men's double side. We have James Ignatowicz and Matt Wright playing for 6 months, Dekelbar and Tyson McGuffin playing for 6 months. And then, a handful of the usual suspect, John's brothers, J-Dub, Baby Dill. I can't imagine Federico and Pablo not playing together. And then I believe we have a Riley and Alshon matchup as well. And that leaves several very quality players. Andre, if he's going to play PPAs, AJ Thomas, Julian Jay, Jack Sock. What do you think about a couple of those matchups? And have you heard anything about those loose players that I mentioned possibly getting together for anything?
No, dude, I've been so out of the loop on who's playing with who. So got James and Matt, which I think will be, you know, that'll be an interesting partnership. A lot of firepower, obviously, good hands. Probably not going to be too much dinking. You know, those trigger pulls are going to come sooner rather than later. Dekel Tyson, which might be a fair amount of dinking. Mm-hmm. And then Fed Stacks, you know, they've proven to be one of the top teams in the game, and they're gonna be right in the mix every single tournament. Who else do we have?
We had Riley and Alshon as well.
Is that just for one tournament, or is that?
I'm not length of time. I'm not positive on, but you're right. I think at this point, Pablo, Federico, J-Dub, Baby Dill, and the Johns brothers literally play the exact same way. Fed and Pob, maybe even the kids had an opportunity or a handful of tournaments where maybe they changed it up, but it is just full on get to the kitchen, dink incredibly well, and find some well-timed aggression if you can. So those three teams are pretty much mirror images of each other. So a little spice with, I think, a Riley Alshon and a James Matt that are pulling triggers off the bounce, not trying to get into those extended dink rallies. I think is intriguing. I just hope that they can play at a level high enough to kind of crack into those top three teams, so we get some of those more, you know, black and white contrasting matchups, as opposed to, you know, two dink happy teams going at it, which we've seen a lot this past second half of this past year.
I mean, it's interesting though, right? It's like, as much as the game evolves, like, that's still the winning formula at the top.
Yeah, if you do it right, consistent play, well-timed aggression is a way to go. And I think that you see some all-on onslaught or some offensive firepower, and it can really do damage against those middling teams. But it's just, no one's been able to crack the code of those top couple guys with how consistent their play is.
Yeah, I mean, being offensives, you know, you're the consistency goes down, obviously. So it's, you know, but when you do kind of see like the top teams go down to, like, let's say a big underdog, it's not because they're out dinking them. It's because they've, you know, they're flicking, they're speeding up, and, you know, it works for a game or two. And then, so you can pull off the big upsets, but you're not going to be able to, we haven't seen it as a winning formula consistently going deep, and like, you'll pull some upsets, but you're not going to, it's just lower percentage pickleball, which,
sure,
you know, the game's still changing, but it's yeah, it's still the winning formula.
Yeah, probably two perfect examples are, say, Julian and AJ. You know, mm-hmm. It's they can literally have a run at any moment, but they can fall off a cliff as well. So I think we touched on it here on this podcast that, you know, say making 10 tournaments, making two semifinals is less impressive to me than making 7 or 8 quarterfinals of those 10 tournaments. So the consistent play, as opposed to, you know, maybe going 1-1, 0-1 for 4 or 5 tournaments and then just catching a banger and going to the semifinals. I think the consistent play is more impressive to me, even though those, you know, those offensive juggernauts can really light you up in the short term.
Yeah, no, totally agree. We also have Jeannie Bouchard playing the Masters in California, which I think I just read a quote to you that somebody posted, and it was like, I don't have my expectations. I don't have many because this is my first event, and I don't know how much pickleball she's played, but I don't think it's a lot.
I would guess it's not a lot. So, yeah, I think it's great. It's very exciting.
Why is it very exciting, Adam?
Well, it's just a wave of talent, and there's talent in all of these players. Now, will it transition to pickleball? We'll find out. Are we talking like 2-0 loss? Are we talking 8-8 against a quality team? Are we talking possibly winning matches against a middling or upper middle class opponent? I have no idea, but I want to see, and I think it's intriguing that these high end tennis athletes just kind of see where they stack up, and I think both ways is fun. If they beat teams they shouldn't beat, that's fun. If they shit the bed and play awful and get lit up by, you know, middling tennis players that are good at pickleball, I think that's fun too. So
yeah, it's all fun,
and that's where I stand on it.
We got Donald Young playing too, and it said, like, there's a quote from him saying he's looking forward to playing a full slate of tournaments in 2024. So it'll be like, I think I've said this in a past podcast when they did the Vegas thing, is that if anybody's game suited for pickle, it's Donald Young, just with how good his hands were and how crafty he was and how he could manipulate. Like, he's got really good feel and finesse, and that was his game in tennis. So if anybody has a skill set to transition, he's one of the guys I'm going to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And he's lefty. Yeah. And I mean, 2 minutes of the bubbly championships, Querrey and Isner were probably both better than Young, but I thought Young was a clear-cut number two in terms of, like, talent that he had in him. Jack Sock was a clear number one. Donald Young, and I would say, you know, Querrey and Isner below him, even though probably in that moment of time they were better pickleball players than Donald Young.
Why don't we have a Sock Young combo, lefty righty?
Yeah, lefty. Yeah, right. Yeah, lefty. That's great for Donald. So,
and they're both kind of coming in at the same time. Like, mm-hmm. that would be a that would have been one fun to see.
Yeah, I know. I'm still I'm still trying to get over to Sock's house so that we can be best friends, because I know that'll happen once we hang out and meet. So yeah. If you're listening to this, Jack Sock, I have no doubt that you are not. Give me a shout. We'll get some touches. We'll get some touches in at the backyard court.
Where's your backyard court, by the way?
I know that's been a project. Well, we got the windows done, which was very pricey, and now we're looking patio. The court. Our backyard is beautiful, but it's very sloped. The court where we thought there was a chance we could have it in an area, but we have a septic tank because we're kind of slightly in the country. So where we need to put the court to avoid the septic tank is going to be a retaining wall in a very expensive situation. So it's just going to get delayed. It's still in the cards, but just going to get pushed back a little bit, which is pretty sad.
It's an important piece of having a compound.
I know. I mean, Tyson has 4 courts on his compound, and that just hurts my heart, as I have 0.
And
he has a casita.
You could build a barn in your backyard, like a big one, and have a tunnel going from your main house to the barn, like we've experienced before.
Mm-hmm. We have been to a place that might be a level of compound that is unattainable for me. But you never know.
Based on the tunnel or what?
I'd say based on most all of it. The barn, the tunnel, and all of it underground connected to our house. Yeah, I don't think any of those three are an option. Shout out to Mike Betancourt for letting us stay in that compound last year.
Yeah, that place is ridiculous.
Okay, so Rob touched on what I hope is PPA players getting on court with everyone. You were phenomenal success the second half of 2023 on the APP tour playing with Andre Daescu. You guys are planning on running that back. Is there any up and coming teams or maybe some names that we know that could give you guys a challenge or what are some of the top teams that plan on playing APP?
Dude, honestly, the APP, like who's playing, it's totally up in the air. I know a lot of the MLP signed players are trying to get more flexibility in their contracts to where they can play APPs. So I truly don't know who's, and I don't know like how many APPs out like we'll be able to play based on the MLP schedule and the conflicts that might arise with that. So it a lot depends on how these contracts play out. But of course, you have the usual suspects of the people that you know we'd run into deep this year. You know, Brendan Long's always right there. Stefano Vern, Sincola. Who else would make deep runs?
Well, he had a seemed like he had a good couple months, but maybe fell off towards the end of the year. Andre Mick,
yeah, Andre Mick as well. I think he's going to be playing more with CJ next year. So they're a tough team for sure, and I think they're a good combo together. I think it's just, yeah, it's. Just more of a consistency issue with Andre and being able to maintain the level. He obviously has a ton of talent and a lot of attacks and really nice shots. It's just, you know, when it's just like we talked about that consistency, like you can beat anybody at any given time and make some crazy runs, but can you maintain?
And it really is a great partner for him because I know the kid's 17, but downy soft defensive hands and very consistent player. So the luscious lefty CJ Klinger, I think kind of could bring Dre down a little bit and make him a more consistent with his results for sure.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah,
let's see here.
It's just, again, more questions than answers like every podcast.
Yeah. And speaking of questions, Rob, I think I'm going to have to sell myself a little bit here, as it looks like there is a very real possibility that the analyst position for commentary is going to be filled in by some of these players who are under contract. So I am very up in the air in terms of how much commentary and what exactly I'm going to do in the pickleball world for 2024. I'm still going to be involved with the Hard Eights who are in the Challenger division, but I'm thinking that at least for 2024, that I could possibly help out a premier team as well. So whether that would be just for a draft or for the whole year and kind of a hybrid coach GM role like I was doing for the Hard Eights, I think that might be something that I need to look at. So pickleball is so new. There's really no perfect recipe for what a GM coaches look like for MLP. But I think the 11 or 12 years of pro poker, the analytical thought process, the game theory. I've been in a high level fantasy baseball draft, auction draft, by the way, which is my specialty. And of course, been in the pickleball world as a player and commentator and coach for quite a while. So I know a lot of these premier teams have their squad and their team set, but I would love to help out and kind of be a part of your team or maybe take over the role if that's what you're looking for. Give me a shout, you premier teams. I'd love to have that as an option in my back pocket.
Well, proof is in the Hard Eights this past season, right?
It was a juggernaut. Good draft for us, but the players really stepped up, made me look good. I will take some credit for that, but the players deserve most of it, that's for sure.
But in terms of drafting, assisting in the draft, kind of having that teed up, and then knowing the players pretty well, and I mean, you guys drafted a good team and put it all together.
Well, thank you, Robert. And I toot my own horn on here for fun sometimes. I think it's a funny joke. I haven't been doing that as much lately, so this is a bit uncomfortable for me. But I really think my resume for this specific role is about as good as anyone's, and I would love to be in the mix.
And Adam, just on the analyst stuff, we have to do this for events that I'm not playing and mm-hmm. that you're available for. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do this. Let's call it technically, but Manny Cast style, like us watching, you know, us being on screen, watching an event, a live stream and commentating on it from right here. I think people would like it.
I like that. Hey, we got on the mic for a couple of hours, Beer City Open, singles day. And it was, I thought it was electric, magical. Any of those words, I think, were perfect on mic together.
That's not even our thoughts. That's the people's thoughts.
Correct. Yeah, that was not from here. That was from them. I was relaying what they had to say, Robert. Yes.
Got to serve bigger.
Got to serve bigger. I forgot about that. I would just like tee you up. Like, Rob, what do you think about that serve from Zayden Averagill or whatever it was?
Got to be bigger than that.
Yeah, so good. And really, this is all still up in the air. It might just settle down and I'm doing more commentary than I think, but I do think it's a real option that I will not be in the mix for commentary for 2024.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because you've obviously proven yourself to be very good at it, and people seem to like listening to you talk about, you know, match analysis and insights because you've played against everybody, you know the game. And yeah, I understand. Look, financially, it makes a lot of sense to have people on salary to fill in and do it, especially when they're trying to find ways to use players and get value out of them. So understand it, but a little bit of a bummer until we do the Manny Cast.
That's right. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise. We'll find out. I'll be helping out a premier team remotely commentating with my boy Robert Nunnery. I mean, it might just fall right where I want it to.
As my good friend, you know, Grant Horatian Austin.
I do.
Nobody. Oh God. He would routinely beat Thomas Wilson just purely based on shit talk. Like he would just get under his skin. Like, and Grant's like a 4 or 5 at best. And he would just get under Thomas's skin so badly that he would just eat him alive. It was,
I love that.
I'm
sad because I had a quote from my years of East Texas poker play. There was about a 6'7" cowboy that used to play the game, wore the hat every single time. His name was Jimmy Potter. And when there would be two of these young gun poker players and they'd go all in against each other, he'd go, "That's when a bulldog met a hound." just like that. And I was waiting for a firefight between two young guns and pickleball, and I was going to break it out. And it looks like now I might not get that opportunity.
No, there's still time. That's still fun. But as Grant would say about all this, it'll all buff out.
It'll buff out.
Yeah. Like no matter what, it'll all buff out.
It'll buff out. Okay. So let's check in on this little, collective. So we have the MLP players kind of banding together, with this salary decrease that a couple players have agreed to and a lot haven't, and what MLP is wanting to happen for this merger to happen at the beginning of 2024. I don't know exactly who it is, but I think it's a big grouping of MLP players. Do you know anything about that, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big group. I think this is a good thing for pro players. Like it's been tried to have been organized for years, you know. Players coming together with all the contract talks, that kind of thing. And everybody always has different goals and objectives for their own career. So it's been hard to get people on the same page, but, there's a collective that's kind of been started, and I think 100 players that are included in that. And yeah, I think the goal is a good thing. It's just, fair transparency, getting, you know, having protection for the players, because obviously MLP requested a pay cut at 40%, I believe it was, for 40% less days required. And I think a big point of contention with a lot of the MLP players is the fact that, you know, there's PPA players that are taking 10% cuts when the PPA contracts were already bloated compared to MLP. In terms of pure market rate and players, you know, players' ability and market value. So, yeah, I think, again, everybody has different objectives. I'm sure there's some people that have a hard line of, I don't want to take a pay cut. I have this contract that you guys created that we signed. So there's some of those. There's some people that are more fluid with it, more flexible, taking a cut. But I think the main thing is all of these conversations and negotiations have been behind, like, there hasn't been a lot of transparency. Like you know, we'll hear one thing from one player about how this took place, and somebody else will get a completely different thing, and there just hasn't been a ton of transparency on, if we take these pay cuts, like, what are the other terms? And they're like, well, don't worry about the terms now. We'll figure that out later. But no, You need to know the terms. So, and we're also negotiating contracts for a company that doesn't even exist, right? Because all of this is based on the merger happening for a company that hasn't even been established. So it's like, go merge, have a new entity, and then let's talk about a contract for it if you want to do that. But it's just strange to be negotiating a contract over a company that's not even real. You know,
I do know. Okay. That was a good breakdown. I like that. And I just wonder why I'm lumping these two words together. Cause I always like to talk about balance, whether it's on the pickleball court or in life. And then I'm going to pair that with transparency. Why is balance so hard? And why is transparency so hard? It seems like all this stuff, whether it's paddle testing, it's money figures, whatever, it just seems to never be transparent, and there's always something hidden, and that's kind of sad and tough, is it not, Rob?
I mean, it is. I lean towards just full transparency. I have no issues sharing numbers, sharing, you know, what I have, what I don't have, what I've been offered, you know, what I've been requested. Like I have literally no issue sharing any of it if I'm contractually able to. So, and I just wish everybody was like that, because I think, you know, if we all just were honest and transparent with each other, we could all come to a fair agreement and fair ground. But again, it hasn't been the case. And I think you know, what I'd like to see, which would be pretty interesting, would be like an open forum, an open town hall with MLP executives, like all the people that have been reaching out and negotiating these contracts with all of the existing MLP signed players. So it's just, it's an open forum. We can ask questions. We can get answers across the board. We can understand where they're coming from. They can understand where we're coming from, rather than doing all of these like private negotiations and, you know, creating kind of these false deadlines that just to create urgency and scarcity and all of that stuff, which puts a lot of pressure on a lot of these players that don't have kind of business experience or an agent per se, that, you know, a lot of the people that I know have agreed to pay cuts have done it because they felt like it was going away and they've just had to make a decision. So, I just think the tactics aren't great. And I would just hope we could just have honest, transparent conversations and an open forum with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that in some of my negotiations a couple years ago, it was similar kind of tactics, false deadlines, kind of striking the fear. And it's tough when you don't know, like you said, business-wise. Like I think I saw some article the other day, what it was like. It's like people with like higher IQs are making like the paperwork and the forms for some of these kind of like welfare and government type things. And it's like extremely overwhelming for some of the lower IQ, less fortunate people to read through these and kind of sign themselves up for stuff. And I think it's similar with the business aspect. These are pickleball players. They might have gone to school or be very good at a specific thing, their degree or whatever. But when you start getting into this legal jargon and these contract situations and whatever, it can be very, very overwhelming and kind of a lot to process and kind of force even smart people or smarter people to make poor decisions given the scenario. And I think that those kind of made sense or clicked in my mind as to somewhat similar situations.
Totally. And kind of with this collective, there's been an angel investor that's been in support of the collective and has put in some funds to retain an employment attorney. So, you know, there's an employment attorney that's been connected with the group, talking to the group. So players do understand their rights and the contract. And so they're well-informed, right? And that's all, I think that's all we're looking for, is for players to be able to have informed decisions based on what their actual rights are, based on what their existing contract says. And just so they're able to make informed decisions, because I don't think many players have been able to make informed decisions.
Gotcha. Okay. So I have two, maybe we can go broad here. These are pretty broad macro level questions here, but do you have any maybe top couple thoughts if the merger happens and if it does not, maybe more specifically, if it does not, could you maybe think of kind of how the dominoes fall and what would 2024 look like?
It's a good question. Because everything I've seen has been based on it occurring schedule wise, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of piggybacking off of the PPA events that they put in the schedule, just to cut costs logistically and on event operations. But if it doesn't happen, I think right now they have it scheduled to each player is meant to play 8 events, 9 being if they're in a playoff or a final situation. So if it doesn't happen, this is something that like Steve Kuhn talked about a while back when he was, I think I was staying at his house in 2022 at some point when I had a surgery in Austin, and I just crashed with him for like a week, and we were talking, and you know, and I think this was a proposal for a while for MLP in terms of the format and the structure, was having men's doubles, women's doubles, mixed doubles, and then going into the team event on the weekend. I still think that's a very viable way to do this, and especially if you can create it to where like your team gets points based on an individual on your team's results in the individual tournament. I think that's a pretty interesting format. I mean, obviously that would take some time to flush out, but yeah, I don't know what they're thinking in terms of if the merger doesn't go through, and is it just going to be the 8 events per player or per team? Or will they have to, or they need to have more? I don't know. But I like the idea of having some individual events attached to the team events.
Yeah, I think so too. Makes sense for a couple different reasons. So yeah, no, that sounds good. And you know, we the merger is supposed to happen, and we there's a lot we don't know. Of course, there's a lot we don't know if the merger doesn't happen as well. But it's fun to kind of.
I think it's more we don't know if the merger doesn't happen, right?
Yeah, correct. For sure. Like you said, these things have kind of the little bit of information that we've had has had that caveat of it's going to happen. So if it doesn't, you know, it's all kind of wild, but it could get real wild if this falls through. And let's be clear, until something is signed, it is always at risk of falling through. That's just how the business world works, especially with these kind of more higher up savvy guys. So just part of the deal.
Even when it's signed, there's
right. Handshake means nothing. Signing means a lot. And even when you do sign it, something could still happen. So yeah, that's just the world we live in. And that's part of the deal. Oh, Rob, we have a bit of sad news here, Robert.
Oh no.
Corinne Carr has officially retired from pickleball.
This isn't a funeral. This is a celebration of life.
A celebration of life. That is correct. Yep. That is correct. So she had a pretty nice little a deal where she was going to have a limited amount of days, and she was going to be able to compete in the MLP events for a decent sum. But she has turned down that contract. Between professoring and mothering, it's just going to be a little too much for her. And I spend a lot of time with her, so therefore too much for me if she was going to spread herself too thin. So I thought it was very interesting. The only two people that have turned down their contracts that were official, or as official as they could be, were Corinne Carr and Kyle Yates. Oh. So Kyle Yates as well, for his MLP, he's just... got in contact with him, said he's not interested. He's going to do his business endeavors or whatever he's got going on. So thought that was the two names. That was pretty interesting. And Corinne, she played her first tournament in 2014. Simone Jardine's original partner. She has women's doubles, 2 U.S. Opens, 2 Nationals, and 3 Tournament of Champions, which were all major events back in the day and still are. At least 2 of the 3 very high-end events on the schedule. So legend of the game, shout out to her. She had a great run. And
Hall of Fame.
And here's some funny stuff. And I no doubt we missed a couple, but just some of the names back in kind of the 2014, 2015, 2016 range that were at the top of the game. A couple that maybe some newer fans would know, but most not. So for the men, it was the beard, Brian Ashworth. We had a little Daniel Moore mixed in. The puppet master, of course, Wes Gabrielson, Matt Blom, Enrique Ruiz, and of course, Kyle Yates. So some of the guys that were at the top of the game at that point, and some of the ladies were Stephanie Lane, Jennifer Lucor, Alex Hamner, Christine Barksdale, and I think that's it. So very, very different times, but all of those players, very quality, and some of them were already in their 40s kind of around that time. So maybe not in the pro ranks necessarily from a lack of talent, but from some of that age. And I feel their pain now in my current situation as well. But just wanted to give a shout out to the prof. Legend of the game, great run, and on to bigger and better things now, we'll say.
Yep, new chapter, little AJ.
Little baby AJ.
And
he's a stubborn son of a gun, that's for sure. he's lucky he's cute as hell, because he does what he wants to, and he's ruling the roost right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, we're going to need an appearance in the next couple episodes.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that getting the Prof and AJ on for a little segment would be nice. And something we were talking about, Rob, is kind of going through, since I mentioned these names, I'll kind of piggyback off of that, going through kind of these little sections of time where certain groups of players were very good. Mm-hmm. And could it be play style, paddle technology, a variety of things that kind of allowed the new guard to come in and take over? So if you are big into pickleball history and you've been following the game for a while, or even more of a new fan, at a later time on an episode, we're going to talk about some of those kind of stepping stones of where the game is today and how it got there. And I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, I think, yeah, for the people that are, you know, been in the sport the last year or even year and a half, it's like now compared to like 3 years ago is incredibly different, mm-hmm. incredibly different based on, and it's not based on like players evolving and getting better. I think it's has everything to do with the paddles. Because mm-hmm. If these paddles were available 3 years ago, people would have understood how, like, it was still tennis players coming in 3 years ago, to be clear. It's not just now that this influx of tennis players is coming in. It's just your stroke has to change less because of what paddles can do now. Back then, I remember trying to roll a ball with like topspin with a fiberglass paddle and the ball just going straight down to the bottom of the net. I'm like, oh, I have to change everything. This, like,
yeah,
that forehand topspin stroke doesn't work. Now it works with the paddles.
Yeah. Watch Anna Bright hit a dink.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. I mean, it is, you know, I mean, she gets it done. She's consistent with it. She has a lot of spin, but my God, like, you can't do that. And if you think that, whatever it is, there's a handful of carbon fiber great paddles out there from a variety of companies. If you think that a shot that you are pulling from mid shin and it lands inside the baseline, if you think that doesn't bounce before the net or literally go over the fence with some of these paddles from 5 years ago, you're completely crazy. Yeah. So it has been quite a ride, and it has changed very, very quickly in the overall scheme of things with some of this paddle technology. And I would put that number one. Of course, different level of athlete coming into the game, different styles, but I would put paddle technology number one for kind of that stepping stone of players getting to the top.
100%. Yeah, you could just do things you couldn't do a few years ago. Well, for better or worse, right? Like I'm hoping that level of you know, evolution with technology kind of slows and we kind of maintain where we're at the higher end of like what's possible, because I think if we go beyond this, it turns into a different game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's already a different game, but yeah. there has to be a cap or has to be a ceiling to how far it goes. And I think probably right around the last 2 to 3 years has been a wild jump. And I expect that to at least slow a little bit.
Yeah,
the paddle technology is not over, but I have to imagine in 2 or 3 more years, it'll just be a little bit better, as opposed to the last 2 or 3 years, it's gotten ridiculously better. So,
yeah. And hopefully it like across different paddle manufacturers, like the, you know, it levels out in terms of what you can do. Cause right now it's still a pretty unlevel playing field in terms of what one paddle can do versus the other. Which you don't really see in other sports. So,
eventually I think it's going to be 1-3% better certain paddles. Right now it's like 40 or 50% better if you're playing with a certain paddle compared to a different one.
Yeah.
And I think that just kind of works itself out naturally. And who knows exactly what period of time, but it'll kind of whittle its way down to everything being pretty close, I think.
Yep. You know, I think we need to give amongst all the chaos and pro pickleball, the APP just chugging along. And not just chugging along, but like putting a lot more events together. I mean, there's only 12 true pro events next year, but you mean they're doing the college stuff. They're doing senior stuff. They're doing a bunch of different things. And I think they're able to kind of grow because they were pretty financially responsible this year and didn't overextend and ran a good tour, and they have a good product, especially for the amateurs. People love playing APP events, and yeah, I think there's some staying power, and mm-hmm. as these other entities kind of fight and, you know, grapple for the pro landscape, APP is just doing their thing.
It's my favorite memes of pickleball ever. Just everybody falling to the wayside and just Ken Herrmann coming through. Ken Herrmann just slow and steady wins the race. I love it. I love
hey,
it.
Hey, Ken's doing it.
Yeah, he's doing it. That Georgia Sweet Tea. He's still handing it out at the tournaments, or has he moved past that? No,
I haven't seen much of the handing out drinks.
The sweet tea. That's okay.
He's out there regulating. He's running cool. A good event.
Good, good, good. That's excellent. You got anything else, Rob?
I feel like efficient episode, Adam.
No, I think so. I like that happy place, like somewhere between 30 minutes and an hour, where you got some chunky good stuff in there, but you start creeping over an hour. That's a long listen or a long watch. So yeah. I feel good about 45 minutes. That's where we're at right now.
Unless we do a deep dive into a subject and want to get our hands dirty, but uh-huh. not today.
Not today.
Keep my hands clean today, Adam.
Uh-huh. I like that.
You know what I mean?
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary. Yeah.